Daniel chapter 6. Last week we looked at this passage, and we are going to look at it again once more. Last week we looked at Daniel and his life of prayer. Today we are going to look at the deliverance of God and the den of lions. The deliverance of God and the den of lions. Good morning. You good? Tired? You ready? All right. I hope you're ready for a big week ahead as we step into Thanksgiving, not Christmas, Thanksgiving, right? We are celebrating one holiday at a time. Yes. So we are stepping into this holiday season, the season of thankfulness. Today we come to the end of this section of this series that we've entitled Saints and Secular, and we're looking at one of the famous, most famous narratives in all of Scripture, Daniel and the Lion's Den. Daniel and the Lion's Den. Let's read Daniel chapter 6. We're going to read the entire chapter today and see this famous story played out. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give an account, so the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. But they could find no ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful. No error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps and the counselors and the governors, all agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction, that whatever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction. So these men are using his pride and his arrogance against him. They know that he has to follow the law once it's written. Unlike the previous kingdom, that was an absolute monarchy, now we're dealing with a constitutional one. Verse number 10, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open towards Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he had done previously. In other words, this was his custom. This is what he did. For some 70 years, since he has gone into captivity in Babylon, this has been the custom of Daniel. He prays. He seeks the face of God. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, "O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" The king answered, "The thing stands fast, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked." Then they answered and said before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. In other words, he was finding any way. He was looking, researching, looking through the laws to see, is there any way that we can get around this? Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed." In other words, we told you so. They kind of rub it in the king's face. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. If you know your Bible, I'm kind of telling the end of the story a little bit. There was another tomb that was sealed as well. And there was a signet in form of two Roman guards placed at the front. And we'll get to that in just a moment. That was a little bit of a picture of where we're headed this morning. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king. I have done no harm." Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So our big idea today is this, that God can deliver even from the mouths of the lions. God can deliver even from the mouths of the lions. You know what's interesting is this chapter marks the end of the historical narrative found in the book. So Daniel chapter 1 through 6 is written in Aramaic. It's written in the language of the times, and the rest of the book is written in Hebrew and written to the people of God about the promises of God and the prophecies of God. But what's interesting is this marks the end of the stories, and we end with the most famous narrative in probably most of the Bible, Daniel and the lion's den. But not only do we see this, the end of this, but we also have a story here of two major contrasts. We have a contrast in first and foremost of two laws. The law of God, we see in verse number 5, and the law of the Medes and the Persians in verse number 8, 12, and 15. So we have the law of God written on Daniel's heart that he would follow God, talk to God, reach out to God, that he would speak to God, and he would obey God. And we have the law of the Medes and Persians, one that cannot be overturned by even a king. The second contrast that we have in this text this morning is between two deliverers. We have King Darius, who seeks to deliver Daniel from the lion's den prior to him being thrown in it and is incapable. And we see him delivering Daniel's enemies to the lions at the end of the story. But we also have God, who is a deliverer, in verse 20 and 27, who shuts the mouths of the lions and delivers Daniel from the pit of death. We see these contrasts. And what's interesting about the book of Daniel is that we consistently see people trying to conspire against him. I don't know if you've ever been there, but Daniel consistently and regularly finds himself in a place where people are trying to conspire against him. His conspirators stand in sharp contrast to who Daniel is. Think about the conspirators in this story. They're jealous, right? He's in charge. He's risen to power. In fact, he has been placed as their boss. Early on, they seek ways to discredit him. They scheme and manipulate the king. Their duplicity is apparent. They try to play both sides. They care little for the truth or the welfare of the empire or the king or even the Medo-Persian law. They're just trying to manipulate the situation. You ever been there? You ever felt like people are trying to manipulate and use situations to try to catch you and trap you? But on the other hand, Daniel is honest and genuine. He has an excellent spirit. He's an excellent administrator, so much so that he's actually risen to power, not because he's a good guy, but because he's actually a shrewd manager. The whole role that he fulfills in the kingdom, in the Medo-Persian Empire, is for the purpose of extending the king's rule and reign and helping it to prosper. You know what's interesting is Daniel is actually a picture of what Jeremiah the prophet encouraged the people of God to do under Babylonian captivity. You can go look in the book of Jeremiah. He encourages the people of God to actually move into the city, to seek the welfare of the city, that it would prosper and that it would have good success. In other words, Daniel does this. He lives this out. He shows the people of God what it looks like to be blameless before God and do the earthly king no harm. So those are some contrasts between Daniel and his conspirators and between the laws and even God. But what's interesting is this is not the first time that God delivers Daniel. For those of you who've been with us, this is a little bit of a review, but for those of you, maybe this is your first time with us, we've been walking over the last few months through this book, and here's a little bit of a review of how God has delivered Daniel up to this point. Chapter 1, Daniel and his friends are divinely delivered in chapter 1 from confrontation with the Babylonian government in relation to food. So they choose to eat food that's not offered to idols. And the result of that is they put the king to the test, and they actually, at the end of the period of time, are stronger and are more effective because, not because they're good people and because being a vegan is a good thing, but because God is the deliverer. God's the deliverer. In chapter 2, once again, God delivers Daniel and his three friends by giving Daniel the interpretation of the king's dream that he could not understand. And we know that actually death was on the line on the ability to interpret the dream, because when the other men could not interpret the dream, they were put to death. So God delivers Daniel by giving him the interpretation. He doesn't have the interpretation because he's a smart guy, but because God is a deliverer. Chapter 3, the king makes a decree, King Nebuchadnezzar, and he forms an idol to be worshipped. And he says, if you will not fall down and worship this, you will be placed into the fiery furnace. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, formerly known as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, are thrown into the fiery furnace, and God delivers them. He shows up in the fiery furnace, and God delivers them. Not because they're smart or somehow fireproof, but because God is their deliverer. He shows up. How about chapter 4? A dream shows up again, and Daniel gives Nebuchadnezzar some scary words about his failure to follow God, and Nebuchadnezzar is actually delivered from his pride and oppression by roaming around like an animal for 7 years or seven periods of time. And ultimately, the king is delivered from his sin by placing his faith and trust in God. And so we see even, it's not just Daniel that he's interested in delivering. It's not just Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that he's interested in delivering. He's even interested in delivering pagan people. Isn't that amazing? Our God is a deliverer. Chapter 5, Belshazzar's kingdom and rule come to an end. And once again, Daniel is delivered from the Medes and Persians by being placed into the kingdom. And he rises in power and becomes influential. And in chapter 6, we come to this text. And God delivers him from the mouths of lions. Mosaic, I want you to see this because I want you to be careful to not believe something that I think the story of Daniel in the lion's den can be told to us from the time we were small children to now, that if we will dare to be like Daniel, then God will deliver us. In other words, God's deliverance is based upon my behavior. That God's deliverance is based upon my ability to please God and do what He wants me to do. In other words, I can obey for my acceptance. Rather, what we see is Daniel obeys from his acceptance, that he is loved by God, cared by God, endured the hardships that he endures because of God, because God never left him. Even in the face of adversity, when things aren't going good, what does he do? He turns his face towards Jerusalem, the city of God, because he knows whose builder and maker it is. You see, it's something altogether different to believe in a deliverer who will deliver you because you are good, rather than because he is good. You see, if you and I aren't careful, we can walk away from a study in the book of Daniel believing things that aren't true and not consistent with the teachings of the Bible. The reality is that sometimes the lions do eat you. And the fire burns you. And it doesn't work out the way that you'd want it to. You see, sometimes God delivers through the lion's den, not from it. Sometimes God delivers you through the fire, not from it. Sometimes God delivers through the pain and suffering. And you and I need to see that the most important thing isn't that we would be delivered from something, but that He would deliver you through the trial. You see, deliverance comes from God. He is God. He's the one who saves. God is the one who saves. And this is what I want us to see today, and we're going to see it in three ways. We're going to see Daniel's deliverance, we're going to see Darius's deliverance, and we're going to see God's deliverance. Let's look at Daniel's deliverance. Daniel's deliverance. So verse 14 and 15 point us to the fact that Daniel is thrown into the lion's den. He is delivered through it, not from it. In other words, there's no way around the law of the Medes and Persians. He's not going to be kept from the lion's den. He's not going to be kept from suffering. This is a good word for some of us this morning because you're going through it and you feel as though God has failed you because He hasn't kept something from you when God wants to deliver something through it oftentimes. You see, his friends went through the fire. They were not delivered from it. His earthly king, Darius, couldn't deliver him. This is what we often do when we're going through difficult tragedy and trials, is we look to everyone else to try to keep us from going through it. And Daniel prays to God 3 times a day in spite of whether or not he's going to be thrown into the den of lions. This is a word that some of us need to hear this morning, because we're going through some of the most difficult circumstances in our life, and we're expecting God to rescue us and keep it totally from us. Daniel's faith in God should inspire us, and it inspired a faith in Darius to believe that Daniel's God could rescue him. I love this. Look at this phrase. Verse 16. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." Daniel faithfully trusted in God to the point where even this pagan king borrowed his faith. He borrowed his faith to say, you know what? I hope your God can deliver you. I hope your God can deliver you. My question for you this morning is this: do you have this kind of faith in God who delivers, a faith worth borrowing? Do you have that kind of faith? The kind of faith that says, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. He will deliver you. I can't tell you how many times that I've stood at the bedside of someone and prayed with them as a pastor, and their family and friends who are pagans, who do not know Jesus, who do not follow Jesus, I begin to pray, and it's interesting to watch them borrow my faith. Borrow it and begin to believe and like question, is God going to deliver? You certainly believe that he can deliver. I wonder if he's real. I can't tell you how many occasions I've seen people turn and place their faith and trust in God simply because a believer actually believed that God had the capability of delivering people. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people who were certainly far from God, like Darius, who have watched people like Daniel trust God, believe God, begin to say things like, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. You see, the idea was, I tried my best to save you, Daniel, but I failed. Now it's up to your God. You see, Daniel's deliverance, to some degree, leads to Darius doing whatever he can to deliver Daniel. It's interesting. You see, Daniel's confidence in God who delivers is so inspiring because it leads him to pray. The question is, when you are facing the lion's den in your life and you need deliverance, what does faith lead you to do? What does it lead you to do? Does it lead you to do things like Daniel does, to the point where people around you who do not believe in a deliverer say, you know what, that God who you serve continually, he's able to deliver you, right? When you are seeking deliverance, what you do really does matter. What you do really does matter, but it's really about God and what he's able to do. Question is, will you exercise that faith in a God who's able to deliver you? Daniel chooses to do this. Let's look at Darius' deliverance, verse 16 through 18. We just read. It says, then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Sleep fled from him. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, that's such a key phrase, it's repeated, has he been able to deliver you from the lions? You see, Darius is delivered from his ability to sleep and rest. Daniel had a better night's rest in the den of lions than Darius had all night in his palace. Isn't that crazy? In other words, as followers of Jesus, I want you to not miss this. This isn't even in my notes. I don't want you to miss this, that you could sleep in a lion's den when you have faith in God. Because God is able to deliver. But if you're here this morning and you do not know Jesus, here's the deal. You will lose sleep when you or your friends face a lion's den because you do not have a deliverer. And it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. You see, he did not need to pray because he didn't believe in God. He didn't have a habit of prayer, Darius, because he didn't believe in God. He is sleepless. You see the contrast between Daniel and Darius? Daniel, upon the death sentence being decreed, prays three times a day in spite. Darius, upon having to follow the law of the Medes and Persians and fulfill the law by throwing Daniel in the lion's den as the king, spends the night sleepless. Darius is not delivered in the same way that Daniel is because he doesn't believe in God. Perhaps Daniel prayed in that lion's den, Psalm 22, verse 21 and 22, "Save me from the lion's mouth. I will declare your name to my brethren in the midst of the assembly. I will praise you." That's exactly what he does when the stone is removed from the lion's den. "Oh, my God has delivered me." He sings the praises of God. But in the middle of the night, I'm sure he prayed, "God, save me from the mouths of the lions. They're right over there." Spurgeon says this, "In any case, he must have had a glorious night. What with the lions and with angels all night to keep him company, he was spending the night watches in grander style than Darius." Darius is in the palace, and he refuses any entertainment to help him go to sleep. My daughter, Ellison, goes to sleep every night to stories, her stories. Player stories. Sometimes it's the Jesus Storybook Bible. Sometimes it's just simple stories like Cinderella and all of this, but we found this one on Amazon Music, and we can't even start with the first one. We have to start with the second one. She likes the story of Cinderella. Before the story's even done, she falls asleep. But every night, she puts these stories on. We click them on our phone, and it plays on her Alexa, and she goes to sleep. When I was a child growing up, we used to listen to things like Patch the Pirate and all kinds of crazy stuff of stories of the Bible, and to this day, I remember scriptures simply that were being read over me as I went to sleep. Darius refuses any method of entertainment to go to sleep. And he remains sleepless. But Daniel, he has a glorious night with the lions chilling and the angels near him because he knows that his God is a God of deliverance. Darius does not have such a great night. Darius runs to see if God comes through with deliverance very early in the morning, the text says. In other words, he cannot wait for dawn to break. This is kind of like for those of us who like to go hunting, right? We get up in the middle of the night to sneak into the woods so that when first light comes, that's 30 minutes before sunrise, right? When first light comes, we have the first chance. This is Darius. He doesn't sleep all night. I wonder. And he runs to the den, and he has the stone removed, and he calls out. And then Darius delivers him physically from the den. God sent his angel to shut the mouths of lions. God sent his angel to protect him, and in his sovereignty, he sent Darius to remove the stone. I want you to see that Darius isn't really the deliverer here. God is. God is the deliverer. God has come through, and it builds a faith in Darius. It's not a saving faith, but it's a faith that leads him to make a command that God should be feared. It's interesting. He says this. He says, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree, verse 26, that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. He does not say, my God. There's something fundamentally different happening here from King Nebuchadnezzar's time of wandering on his hands and knees as an animal. At the end of that, he declares that he is his God. At the end of this text, Darius delivers Daniel from the lion's den, and then he makes a decree that all should worship Daniel's God, not my God. It's interesting. Some of you are here today, and you do the same thing. You see God work in people's lives, and you try to borrow their faith, but not to the point where you make it your own. Not to the point where you say, this is mine. This is a decision I am making to follow Jesus and give him my life. And similarly to Darius, you miss out on the deliverance that God has offered. On the surface, it seems that Darius had turned the corner to place his faith in the one true God. And in the end, it's a borrowed faith and it's not a personal faith. There are some of you who are here that have been doing this your entire life. You borrowed your mom's faith, you borrowed your grandma's faith, you borrowed your dad's faith, but you do not have a personal faith. You don't have a faith that would lead you to believe that God is your deliverer in the same way that Daniel believes that. And I want to tell you this morning, it doesn't have to be this way. You can see that God has delivered you, that God has delivered you through the person and work of Jesus, that Jesus came to live the life that you could not live. You could not deliver yourself. He came to die the death that you deserved. He was placed on a cross. His hands and feet were nailed to the cross. A crown of thorns was placed on his head. Why? Because that is what you deserve. You deserve to be delivered to the cross because of your sin. But Jesus was delivered to the cross so that you would not have to die in your dead sins and trespasses. But you could be made alive together, like the book of Romans says. That you could put your faith and trust in him. Faith simply means I'm going to trust that Jesus' life was lived in my place. That Jesus' death was for me on my behalf. And that he was buried and he rose from the dead so that you could have everlasting life. That's what it means to put your faith in him. To trust that he's done that for you. To depend upon the fact that Jesus' life was lived and died for you and rose from the dead to give you new life. And then you rely solely upon him, similarly to the way that Daniel does. Daniel relies upon God. You see, it isn't enough to say the God of Daniel. You see, saving faith says the God of Darius, the God of Jamie, the God of Bill. Because God is a personal God who has come to save you from your sins. In the end, God delivered Daniel from the mouth of the lions, and God used Darius to deliver Daniel from the pit of the enemies. But it didn't lead Darius to be delivered from his sin. And it doesn't have to be that way. Why? Because God has brought deliverance through the person and work of Jesus. I love the book of Daniel because ultimately it points us to a greater person than Daniel. It points us to a greater deliverer who is Jesus. You see, Daniel 6 points us to Jesus Christ. Because Jesus was actually a man without blame. He was placed in the ground, and the stone was rolled in front of the tomb, and two Roman guards were placed like the signet was here. You see, Jesus was faithful to God in all ways, a man noted for prayer, and he was sent to his death because of jealousy of religious people. Very similar. Because Jesus was ultimately condemned to death by the plotting of his enemies, and because of the law of the land. very similar. He was thrown into a stone room meant to be his tomb, and a stone was rolled over the opening. But all its power and ferocity, death could not touch him. On a morning, the stone was rolled away, and Jesus came out victoriously, similarly to Daniel. But ultimately, it wasn't just for his rescue, it was for ours. See, Jesus is the true and better and greater Daniel because he is our great deliverer. Jesus is the only way to true deliverance in our lives. You see, his entire ministry was a ministry of deliverance. Listen to Psalm 37, verse 40. The salvation of the righteous comes from the Lord. He is their stronghold in the time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. So how do we accept this? How do we believe in this? How do we trust in this? So for the non-believer, Psalm 70 verse 5 says this, I am poor and needy. Come quickly to me, O God. You are my help and deliverer. O Lord, do not delay. This should be your prayer this morning. Do not leave here today. This is a strong plea for you to trust in the God who delivers, who saves, that you do not have to leave here today in your pride like Darius, but you can trust in God and cry out to him and say, I am poor and needy. Come quickly to me, O God. You are my help and deliverer. O Lord, do not delay. Daniel always went to the true source of power with petitions for deliverance because he knew where his help comes from. So if you're here today and you know Jesus and you're going through it, we serve a God who delivers. We serve a God who delivers, who delivers us and delivers our life from the pit, who we can look to the hills and find where our help comes from. Our help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. Do you believe this today, Mosaic? That if God can make the heavens and the earth, if he can redeem your life from the pit, then he can deliver you from whatever situation or through whatever situation you are going in and going through. He is the complete deliverer from every circumstances and for every circumstances and through every circumstance. He is always with you to deliver you. This is why Jesus says to his disciples as he's ascending to heaven, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. What is this promise? His promise is that he will come back and deliver us from this world. That this isn't all that there is. We serve God who delivers. One day, if you have trusted in him, he will deliver you from the pain. He will deliver you from the sadness. He will deliver you from your sickness. He would deliver you and your family from cancer. He will deliver you and your family from Parkinson's. All kinds of crazy things. Ultimately, this isn't all that there is. There's a kingdom that's coming. And he is the only God worth putting our faith in. Because he is a God who promises to come back. So we trust in him. We believe in him because he is our God who delivers.